Nobody knew that healthcare could be so complicated.
Trump was a failure on healthcare.
Hundreds of thousands of black Americans lost healthcare insurance. That is outrageous.
And if he's president again, he would cancel insurance for millions more of us.
We cannot go back. President Biden and Vice President Harris have lowered healthcare premiums and expanded coverage for black families. They also capped the price of insulin at $35. Joe Biden is getting the job done for people just like me.
I'm Joe Biden, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Biden for President.
As you know, I've been on the campaign trail. We've only got 9 days left. It's really important that you go out and vote on June the 7th. It is essential that you get out and vote. So many people have told me they're voting for me. But the saddest part I found of the whole experience so far the last 4 weeks is so many people told me they weren't registered to vote. And then other people said, I wouldn't be bothered voting. There's no point. If we all have the attitude that there's no point in voting, and I know where that attitude comes from. In the last election, of course, you all voted, you know, say, for example, at that time for Sinn Féin. That's radically changed now because I'm not hearing good things about Sinn Féin anymore. But you all thought you'd vote for change and it didn't happen. And I know why people feel let down when they vote. They feel that democracy is not working for them. But if we do it, if we all get out there together, I really strongly believe, not just because I'm running for election for the European Parliament, but I strongly believe this is the year that the change will happen. I believe in the local elections, we can take back power in the councils. And I do believe in the European elections, there's going to be a massive swing to the centre and right all across Europe and all across Ireland as well. So please do go out and vote. If you don't vote, you can't be part of that change. You can't turn around for the next 5 years and complain about it if you haven't actually voted. And that's the problem. People say, oh, nothing changes. It's because they don't vote. And sadly, in some parts of Ireland, and particularly in Dublin as well, there are areas where the voting turnout is only like 26%, 25%. That's not good enough. We need everyone to come out and vote. If we all get out and vote, it's our constitutional right. It's our duty. There are men, and I get told this all the time, that stood outside the GPO in 1916 for your right to make a choice and be part of democracy and vote. That is your right, and you have the right to be part of that democracy. So please do it, and vote for me, of course. I'll talk to you more about that a little bit later on in the campaign trail and where we're going, and we'll be back out again, of course, tomorrow. Well, actually, later on this afternoon. I have to do an interview a little bit later on, and we'll talk about the RTE debates that I've been on over the last week, and I'm also on The Week in Politics on Sunday, too, and I'll tell you all about that, too. But I've lots of news, and I'll give you a little bit of an update. But the first thing I want to get to, I want to talk about this idea. As you know, there's elections in the UK as well. And Rishi Sunak has pledged to introduce mandatory national service, which would see young people spend a year in the military or do volunteer work at weekends. The Prime Minister doubled down on the proposal on Sunday, saying that national service schemes in other countries show how fulfilling it is for young people. 12 months of mandatory national service would be reintroduced by the Conservatives if they win the general election. 18-year-olds would be able to apply for one of the 30,000 full-time military placements or volunteering at the weekends. So the plan is that if you're not working and you're not in full-time education, you have to do it. But if you are working and in full-time education, you do it at weekends on a voluntary basis. You will get paid for it, by the way. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said he believed bringing back compulsory service across the UK will help foster the national spirit that emerged during the pandemic. And the Labour have criticised the plans, by the way, expecting it to cost £2.5 billion. As a desperate and unfunded plan. The Conservatives want the first teenagers to take part in this pilot scheme from September 2025, that's next year, with details to be worked out by the Royal Commission. He also said this is a great country, but generations of young people have not had the opportunity or experience, the experience they deserve, and there are forces trying to divide our society in this increasingly uncertain world. He said, I'll bring in a new model of national service to create a shared sense of purpose among our young people and a renewed sense of pride in our country. Now, there's currently 10 European countries have compulsory military service: Austria, Estonia, Denmark, Finland, Greece, Latvia, Lithuania, Norway, Sweden and Switzerland. Russia's invasion, of course, of the Ukraine had prompted many countries in Europe to reconsider their stance on national service. Even the French president, Emmanuel Macron, implemented a service, National Universal, what they call it, SNU, the General National Service, which will be an option for all male and female citizens aged 15 to 17 years of age, starting, that started back in 2021. But is it a good idea for people, and let's say for people who are not working, young people 18 years of age, who don't get a job or don't go into full-time education, is it a good idea to say to them, well, look, you're going to have to do national service. If you don't get a job or get an education, do national service. Is it? It's like conscription, I suppose, essentially. Is it a good idea? Let me know what you think. The number is 085 122 55. That's 085 122 55. Lorenzo, I'll be with you in a second. Let me go to John. John, hi, how are you?
Afternoon and best of luck going forward, anyway.
Thanks very much, John. It's been hard work. I need a new pair of shoes. I've never done so much walking in my life.
Well, I've news for you'll probably wear out another pair on the next week.
I know, yeah. The next week is going to be the hardest. Well, we've been doing it now for nearly 5 weeks. And it's been every day. We've been up at 6:30 in the morning, going to bed at 12 o'clock at night. So, but look, it'll be worth it. You know, I think I could be part of a change. And according to Boyle Sports Betting, they have me at number 2 out of 23, if that's anything to go by. So hopefully, you never know. You never know.
Well, I think you'll agree what I'm going to say next as well. You've met a lot of people, I guarantee, you know, that are desperate to talk to somebody like yourself. They're just sick shit of what's going on in this country.
You know, the saddest moment was yesterday. I was in the square yesterday in Tala. And a woman came over to me and she started telling me that she had cancer and she was waiting 7 months to get an appointment. And she'd been diagnosed with terminal cancer. And then she started crying. And I said, are you okay? Yeah. And she said, I just want a hug. And I gave her a big hug and it broke my heart that she's in a country. And I had these politicians sitting around me in RT the other day talking about being humanitarian and being, you know, and treating people humanitarily. And I said, you know, there's a woman who's dying, who has a terminal illness, has cancer. Mm-hmm. She can't get an appointment in her own hospital service. And these people are worried about the humanity from people all over the world. Let's have a little bit of humanity for our own people.
No, I met a man the other day, and look, he needs pain relief, and he needs to be involved with a pain relief team in a hospital. And do you know when he got the appointment to meet that pain relief team? 6 years time. The man is 73 now.
God love him. That's the problem is, you know, well, but that's the reason when I see the Fianna Fáil posters that say Europe matters, as far as I'm concerned, when I go to Europe, Ireland matters. That's all that matters to me is Ireland. As an Irish MEP, that's all that should matter to me is Ireland.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Not Europe. But getting back to this, the idea of national service. So Rishi Sunak thinks this is a good idea. Now, they've got their elections on July the 4th. I don't know why they picked July the 4th, by the way, Independence Day, but now and ever. July the 4th, their elections. You know, is this a vote-getter, do you think?
Well, look, Sunak is on the way out. I mean, the Tories are in disarray. They're hemorrhaging MPs on a daily basis, Amos. And he's a dead duck. Like, I mean, the man is a multimillionaire, but the fact is he'd miss the power, obviously, when he loses the election, and loses he will. This is desperation, you know, on his part. No, I mean,
I would hate to live in Britain with a Labour government, mind you. Can you imagine Keir Starmer being the leader of Britain? Can you only imagine?
What makes me...
The man doesn't even know, you know, what a woman is. He thinks a woman has a penis.
And I mean, did they ever think to see today that the man that would be leading the Labour Party, right, going into the next election, would be a knight of the realm, Sir Keir Starmer, like. Labour was to come from working class backgrounds, right? And you're the leader, like, and he's a knight of the realm, like. Give me a break.
Yeah. Well, anyway, is national service a good idea? Do you, like, if some young fella, let's say, is, you know, 19 years of age and he hasn't got a job, he's sitting at home playing his PlayStation, he hasn't got to further education, you know, I mean, would it not be better that we say, well, look, in you go, into the army, or, you know, or look, we're cutting you off at all?
I would rather plump for the community service and help, because there's a myriad of organisations out there looking for people to help on a daily basis.
Well, that's part of it, isn't it? That's what the French did as well. Well, that's kind of part of the national service. They put you into the fire department as well and different things just to get you a bit of experience.
Yeah, but it's the army I would have a problem with, because, like, I mean, we all know what conscription did in the United States of America, where young men, and of course, mostly from working class backgrounds, were conscripted to go over and be blown to pieces in Vietnam. So it would be anti-conscription or anything to do with the army from day one. They'd want to look after it. And if the Irish government think about maybe copying that here, that would be totally against it as well, because we have three ships down in Harbour lying below, and they can only crew one ship at the moment, though, because they haven't got enough sailors. So the army are in disarray as well. Look, I always said before, and I said in your show, pay the guys in the defence forces here a decent wage, the same as the guards and whatever. Yeah, this is what's wrong, right?
No, no, you're right. They're good men and women doing a hard day's work, and they get paid peanuts.
Yeah, of course, yes. They should be in the power with the prison officers and the guardie and the firemen. That's a given. Yeah. I just don't know why that don't happen. Simple as that. Yeah. But as a guy's conscription, I would be totally against it. Like, I mean, I know these Israelis...
Well, wasn't the army, John... Sorry for interrupting, but the army, even in Ireland, if you go back to the 1960s and 70s, when there was a lot more members than there is now, probably, I think there's 7,500 now, but the defence forces, as we call them. When you go back in time, the army was generally the place for young fellas who had left school early, who didn't have an education, you know, and I'm not casting aspersions on them. I'm just saying, you know, are people who had gone a bit wayward or whatever into the army with you. You know, that was a kind of thing, wasn't it?
And the guys that went into the army that says, like, I mean, would be looked down and by a lot of people in the community that you actually look, they're only the drugs. I mean, they were good
for I would have never done looked down on people. I think
only the army would have taken them and all this carry on. But a certain segment of, even here on Cork, they would have looked down on people that were in the army. But that has changed. That has changed. But as I say again, they're not being paid properly, right? But look, I would plumb definitely, as I said, for maybe service in the community, like, but I don't like this idea of pushing young fellas into uniforms and trained how to use guns, because guns kill people.
Mm. Well, they do. And I don't agree with funding, although Micheál Martin, of course, in Fianna Fáil last year claimed that humanitarian aid was training people to use a rifle. I don't know how he figured that one out, by the way.
If that wasn't a breach of our neutrality, I know what was.
As far as I'm concerned, it is a breach of our neutrality, but then again, they don't seem to care about our neutrality anymore. I do.
No.
Stay there for a second. Let me just go to Lorenzo as well. Lorenzo, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall, how are things?
Good. Lorenzo, in relation to, not our neutrality, I'll come back to that in a few minutes, because we did talk about that last week. In relation to this idea of conscription or military service or whatever word you want to use for it, is it a good idea?
I think it is. I mean, if I have to play the kind of old mentality card, I can say that you literally see that the new generation has no respect for nothing. So if they go in the army, then they gain the how to bring respect, how to follow the rules, how to be more within the lines, if you know what I mean.
Sorry for interrupting, but I don't know your age, but Italy didn't get rid of conscription that long ago. So it was only, 20 years ago?
No, I was into it. I had basically to, I sent papers twice to postpone, because the first year I was in the last year of high school, and the second year I was in the first year.
And what was the conscription up to 2005? Wasn't it in Italy they had conscription? So how long did you have to? How much military service did you have to do? A year, was it?
1 year. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So you could do 1 year in the army, or you were basically saying that you were a conscious objector and you were getting into the kind of civil defense, the same here that is here, the civil defense, basically.
Yeah.
So you still have to do something for 1 year if you were not actively looking for a job, or you were not actively involved into the university education or things like that.
Yeah,
that's why, Niall, I would come for rather with doing work in the community, because, I mean, otherwise, are we talking about, like, if you don't go down the conscription route and you don't agree to join in the army, that your benefits will be cut?
See, the argument is, not that I agree with it, but the argument is that, you know, the world is becoming a more dangerous place when we see what's happening around the world, particularly with the war in Ukraine and Russia, Israel, Palestine. You know, when we look around the world has become a more dangerous place. And heaven forbid, if Joe Biden gets back into power again as the president of America, I think we're heading towards World War III.
God forbid.
Yeah, God forbid. So we're heading towards World War III. I mean, so realistically, isn't this why, I suppose, Europe seems to be, you know, gung-ho to train people up? And that's why we're seeing a lot of countries now looking at national service.
But this idea, like, I mean, that Putin, like, I mean, if he gets his way in Ukraine, and look, there will have to be...
Oh, I don't necessarily believe that, by the way.
I believe, like, I mean, that a certain amount of Ukraine will have to be forfeited, like, I mean,
I think that's eventually what everybody believes will happen. There's no winners of war. I sat at a debate the other day with Aon O'Riordan and a few others, and they all kept using this word, you know, when Ukraine or if Ukraine, we need Ukraine to win this war. And I said, there's no winners in wars.
There's not. And what I don't agree with, this idea, like, I mean, that we're on the verge of something catastrophe like that. Putin, then, if he gets his way in Ukraine, he'll start looking around in other directions.
Yeah, he'll invade Poland and all sorts of. I don't think he's going to do that.
I
think he's mad, but I don't think he's that mad. Okay, but Lorenzo, you know, I do understand, you know, what you're saying. So if you've got some lad and he's left school and he has no intention of going into first or third level education and he's no job and he's just kind of being a waster, essentially, or a young girl, I mean, that they should be, you know, pushed into the military. You don't believe it's such a bad idea?
Well, I think that even from a financial point of view, if you're home doing nothing and the state is paying you, the state is losing because it's giving you something for nothing.
Yeah.
If you are unemployed while you're studying, the study is your employment. And that's fine because you're basically investing your time and even money because you have to pay the university. But even if the state is paying you the university, you're still investing your time to go forward for a future job. But if you don't do that and you're not investing your time, you're not investing money, you're home doing nothing and wait for somebody else to pay for you staying home, that is a loss from a financial point of view, and even morally is a loss, because then the state is saying, oh yeah, stay home, somebody else, I can stay home, Niall Boylan will pay for it.
Yeah.
And then what happens if Niall Boylan tomorrow say, fuck it, I want to stay home as well, and somebody else will and go on. You reach a point where basically nobody will work, or nobody will say.
I would kind of agree with you in a sense that if we had a defence force that was well invested in, which we don't, unfortunately, they don't invest a huge amount of money in it, right? Like, say, for example, the British Armed Forces, where, you know, people go in and even Irish people join the British Army, and they join the British Army because the opportunities are better. And there's a better opportunity to be an engineer or a mechanic or to gain skills than there is in the Irish Defence Forces. Don't get me wrong, you know, some of the stuff they do in the Irish Defence Forces is great, but we don't invest in it. But if there was the same opportunities, I wouldn't see an issue with it. But I don't want to see some young lad or young girl being put in there to walk around a square with a rifle over his shoulder for a year and do very little because we don't have the investment in it. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand, but that's because obviously you don't have a kind of, as far as understood, a full-time army kind of thing.
No, so, but it's not an army. They're a defense force, yeah.
I mean, that's because that's it, more UK, where it's more, they have a full-time army, and probably for even their purpose, they need more people in the army, even as you were saying, for the defense or for the future wars, if they're going to be there. But even if in Ireland you put them in the civil defense or things like that, where they will learn probably how to repair a truck or, you know, and get skills, then those skills can be used for the future job once the thing is done. I mean, I don't know here how it works, but in Italy you can be in the army and still study. I had in my class, there were two guys that they were in the army, in the cavalry, let's say cavalry regiment, and they were starting to be vets. They were starting to be horse vets to be able then to take care of the horses that are still used for parades and these type of things. There were people most likely doing the same for mechanics or other chemistry, or if you're in the army and you want to do you want to be a medic, you probably have to go to medic school. So the army can fund you doing university, but you're still part of the army, you're going to the drills, you're in the camp, you follow the army rules and study.
Okay, well hang on just for a second. Let me just go to Jason. Jason, hi, how are you?
Good afternoon, Niall, how are you? Hold on, give me one sec.
Okay, Jason. I'm actually looking at a headline that literally has just come in Sky News. The British Prime Minister has said national service will keep people out of trouble. And he said it would be a rite of passage.
Nah, no, can you imagine that working in this country with the little feckers we have?
But we don't. Well, that's only because we don't invest. I'm not suggesting, by the way, we should remain neutral, absolutely, but we should invest in the men and women who are there.
Niall, we don't have that mentality. We're not part of the mainland Europe where they were through a war, through world wars. We weren't really through that. That didn't really affect us that much. They have that mentality over there. We don't. Our little shits won't get out of bed in the morning. You know that way? Could you imagine a drill sergeant shouting at an 18-year-old now? He'd tell him to fuck off, or his mammy and daddy would sue him.
You know? But if, okay, let's talk about Britain then, right? Do you think it's a good idea for Britain? If we were living in Britain, would it be a good idea?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But see, Britain are a war machine anyway. So they're always ready for war. They're ready for war at the drop of a hat. They have to be.
So you think forcing people to go into the military or to go into community service in the fire department or whatever, which is what the French do, do you think that's a good idea if they're not doing anything else, that is?
But no, if they're not doing anything else, it's already shown that way inclined. A few of them might walk out in the army, but like, what I'm saying
is... they've no choice. Well, they have to do what they're told.
Over in England, they do. There's no fine for it.
What I'm saying is... When you're in the army, you're saying you think they'll do anything while they're in there. They'll sit in their hole and do nothing, right? If you're in the army or the defence forces, you know, you're up at 8 o'clock in the morning. You don't get out of bed. It's not like another job where you can just pull the duvet over you and say, I couldn't be bothered.
Niall, but you're forcing these kids in there. They're not going to do it. They're not going to play by the rules. A good soldier is a person who wants to be in there. A conscripted army will run at the first chance. You know, I mean, and do you want that?
I don't agree with you because for many years, this country, young fellas went into the army who didn't particularly want to go into it. They were forced.
Nobody knew that healthcare could be so complicated.
Trump was a failure on healthcare.
Hundreds of thousands of Black Americans lost healthcare insurance. That is outrageous.
And if he's president again, he would cancel insurance for millions more of us.
We cannot go back. President Biden and Vice President Harris have lowered healthcare premiums and expanded coverage for Black families. They also capped the price of insulin at $35. Joe Biden is getting the job done for people just like me.
I'm Joe Biden, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Biden for president.
Joe by the parents.
It was different. Niall, it was different back then, though, years ago. Nowadays, parents don't force their kids to brush their teeth, for fuck's sake, Niall. could you imagine little Johnny going home on Saturday and telling his mammy, the Melanie, that the John in the army was after being shouted at him all week? Sure, she'd be up on the fucking scooter in 2 minutes to him.
Mm.
Yeah. You know what I mean? We don't have that mindset in this country. You must remember that we love playing the victim because we were oppressed for 800 fucking years. You know, that's the mindset we play.
So do you not think it's a good... I mean, as I said, there's a headline just literally here. Richie Sunak says, National Service will keep young people out of trouble. He also said, you know, that it's going to be a big talking point in the election. And he said it'll transform people's lives and give them skills and opportunities. And he believes the service gives a person purpose and it's a rite of passage. They're all the kind of fancy cliches he's using.
Yeah, that's what the are, like, cliches.
Well, yeah,
I mean,
okay.
That's all the art of him. He's great at the cliches. Do you think his kids are going to be doing it? He's the richest man in England, for fuck's sake.
Well, he's already... Well, there's a suggestion if he doesn't get elected, he's moving to California. So
he's gone. Why do you think he pulled the election this close or this early? He can get his kids into school in September over in California now. He has no interest. I'd say he's going to be the sickest man on the planet if he wins that election.
Yeah, he probably doesn't want to win it. But well, actually, stay there because Steve, let me wait just a second. I'm just going to Kieran first. Kieran, hi. How are you doing, Kieran?
Hi, Niall. How are you?
Good. Kieran, is this even a good idea, the idea of national service? By the way, you know, we wouldn't be alone in it, and certainly Britain wouldn't be alone. There's 10 other European countries have national service.
Yeah, but it's nonsense. You know, I mean, you know, as proposed in the UK, what might as well just double the wages for volunteers, you get your 30,000 men. Other than that, it's about social engineering. Get them all in for a weekend and whatever. Say this, that, and the other thing. Yeah, you know, I've lived in England for years. Mm. They're not particularly militarist. Society, what happens, you know, if you get the kids in, get them into the army, you get bullied, oh, and they run off, and it's DEI or DEA, you know, oh my God, I'm being abused because somebody's bullying me. Army's about bullying. How do you get recruits in and turn them out? Doesn't care what they believe at the start. By the time you come out of a 6 months training, you shoot your mother if it's done properly. That's what militaries are.
But I suppose his idea is to get these housing estates all across Britain, you know, where you would have high unemployment rates and young fellows coming out of school and just getting themselves into trouble and not going to education and not getting a job. And I suppose he's looking at some way of, you know, solving that problem.
Well, I mean, I just say, you know, if he wants, take it back. They want 30,000 soldiers a year, double the salary.
Mm-hmm. You know, they have said this is going to cost $2.5 billion. Because they are going to pay people. Now, the idea, as far as I can see, is that if you're unemployed and have no education, you're going in. If you are employed and you have an education, you can go in voluntarily at the weekends.
which is like the FCA, I suppose, used to be here years ago. But I mean, and you get paid. You know, I don't know how much money you get.
Yeah, but they're massive. They're badly paid. I mean, the British Army can't hold on to troops, just like the Irish Army can't hold on to soldiers as it is because they're not paying them.
Yeah, yeah, but everybody knows the opportunities within the British Army are certainly better than the opportunities within the Irish Defence Forces, because you can learn a trade, an apprenticeship, a skill, you know. So, I mean, I'd rather have Johnny 18, who's going nowhere in his life and hanging out with gangs on the streets, you know, in there training to be a mechanic or something like that, than have him out in the street doing nothing. Is that not a bad idea?
Yeah, and look, I've done time in the military. I'm not anti it, but I just don't believe in the concept of the conscription. Also in the UK, do you think of all those mothers worrying when Johnny is deployed to Afghanistan or some other shithole, you know?
Mm. Yeah, that's the fear, isn't it? Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and that's not... I don't see it as a vote winner for him, but that's neither here nor there. I mean, I believe in military service, but, it's not the... you can create pretty serious monsters, too.
Mm. Well, do me a favor, say that, Ciarán. Let me just go to Stephen as well. Stephen, hi, how are you?
Grand, thanks, Niall.
Good. Stephen, is conscription a good idea? The idea of conscription or, you know, national service, or the French system is a little bit different, whereby you don't have to go into the army, you can go into the fire department, you do a little bit of everything, you know what I mean? I mean, is it a good idea?
Well, I think, you know, if we're talking, I think there is actually a difference between a national service and conscription, you know.
Mm.
I think conscription is really only done at time of war if you need to improve the
well,
rank.
He is talking about compulsory. He is using the word compulsory. Now, that's in relation to people who are unemployed or not in further education after the age of 18. But there is a voluntary part of it as well for those who are in education or do have a job.
And
they can do it
on
the weekends.
And they won't get paid for their weekends.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think in general, the idea of some kind of national service is a good idea. In much the same way as I would have said over the years that, you know, a lot of people should be forced to work in a restaurant as a waiting staff for, you know, 6 months or a year, and they'd second learn fast enough how not to speak to them,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think everyone should have some experience in a public-facing role that, you know, gives them an insight as to what...
Bit of life experience.
People are actually
going
to think and feel, and how you should interact with other arms of the state, much the same way as politicians do. You know, so I think it's a general good idea. Do I think this is going to win him any votes? Probably not. And I think your point about him, he would be pretty feckin' miffed if he actually did win a seat in the next election.
Yeah, I don't think he wants to.
A lot of problems are going
to
be there for him,
yeah.
You know?
No, I don't think he will. I think Jason's right. I think he preferred to move to California. I don't think he wants the job. I think the British people are terrified of Keir Starmer as well.
Something like this is a good idea because... Coming out of, like, this is why we set up youth and community work in the early 1900s, because the church and the state felt that young people were a menace to society and something should be done about them.
Well, some young people are.
For them to go and do. And some people are, absolutely. And other people just need that little bit of a diversion or, you know, another opportunity or an outlet to go and do something and find their path in life. I won't say threatened, but certainly suggested to go into the army when I skipped a lot of school in fifth and sixth year when I was a kid because I was being bullied and so on. So I decided to opt out of school for 6 months or so. But it worked out in the end, and I got through it all, and I didn't end up going into military service, you know. So I think if you're recruiting people to the reserve forces and not deploying them actively in war zones and everything else, then that's a good idea. Have them in learning their trades, building houses, repairing things in storm damage, all of these kinds of things that you see civil defence do. Like, we have 4,500 civil defence in Ireland. You know, have them do that and have them do community service as opposed to there's a gun, off you go.
Yeah, to Afghanistan, as Ciarán mentioned a few minutes ago, or to some other part of the world where you don't want your kids to be going. But Ciarán, would that be a bad idea? That, you know, that you would be part of the civil defence, you know, doing community work, working with the fire department, maybe the local library or whatever it happens to be, that, you know, that kind of working, you know, with the community.
Okay. Yeah, on balance, if you keep somebody off the street, probably be a good idea. But, you know, there again, just the logistics of it, you know, who's going to do it? You know, you've got a world now where somebody looks at you... Some guy gets pissed off and says, oh, he touched me up or something. You know, you've got a warfare, you know. Mm. And, you know, like, let's be honest, a lot of the people who will be the mentors in this might be the best people in the world either.
Yeah.
you know. But, I mean, I take it, look, yeah, I'm not against it. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, it used to be done at school, but what happened at school? You can't discipline anybody, so, you know.
Yeah, but when I talk about young people, when I talk about young people on the air, you know, a lot of people on a regular basis say to me that young people who get themselves into trouble or end up going down that path in life should go into boot camps, and people use the word boot camps all the time, right? We should have some sort of boot camps for young people or whatever it is, put a bit of manners on them and what have you. Those young people who've gone wayward, you know, so this is kind of a boot camp, essentially, isn't it, for a year?
Yeah, but it could be quite a brutal boot camp. And are we, is society as it is now prepared to tolerate that? You know, the bullying claims, the harassment claims, you know. I mean, you know, and I went through basic training and it's not fucking pleasant. Excuse my language.
Yeah. I mean, no, I was in the FCA, if that counts, by the way, when I was 16 years of age. Yeah, I was in the FCA for 3 years. So and it was every Sunday, you know, when you're marching around a square or shooting a gun every now and again. I was excited about the whole thing. And yeah, you know, you'd have sergeants shouting at you and all sorts of things. But I think it does put a bit of manners on you.
Oh, yeah. And if you're in service, even if you've been in the military part, it's not 8 o'clock in the morning. It'll be 5:30 or 4:30, by the way. It's much earlier.
That's alien to me, by the way. 5 o'clock in the morning, that's alien to me. I'm a struggle at 7:30.
Okay, there's a lot of stuff there, but I mean, why couldn't you, you know, and I'm not saying this, you know, I've become of the right because everything else moved to the left. I mean, why not do it at school? You know, you can inculcate those values just as well, but it requires a slightly harsher regime. That's all, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, Stephen, would you be in favour of kind of community service, you know, from a school point of view during transition years? And well, they kind of do anyway, don't they, Stephen? They
kind of do with the work placement scheme anyway, and you know, like we have, you know, in jobs that I've been in, we've had Erasmus students and people like that coming over to learn English and getting involved in the community and doing bits and pieces. We already do stuff like that. And I do think that's a really good idea because it instills that kind of civic understanding and civic kind of understanding of responsibility and duty in younger people, you know, and that's always a good idea.
My only fear is that there's a kind of push to do this in many countries across Europe at the moment because of obviously the war in Ukraine and Russia and everything else, right? So there's a kind of push to do this from the European Union point of view, which
is
something
a bit knee-jerk, all right.
Yeah, and the reason that I say this is obviously because I'm running for election and I am a person who believes in our neutrality and I don't believe we should ever be part of any European army. And I can see us heading in that direction. So Leo Varadkar himself toyed with the idea of joining NATO only last year, you know, toyed. And by the way, Micheál Martin said it wouldn't be such a bad thing either. So in saying that, and they want to get rid of the triple lock and all those kind of other things. So I'm not in favour of that. And I think we voted absolutely during the Lisbon Treaty that we wanted to remain neutral. We don't want to be part of a European army. And that was suggested at the time and everybody poo-pooed it. And I believe that's coming down the road.
Well, I do think that our neutrality is our primary thing and it always should be. And if we decide to send troops anywhere, it should be our decision. So removing the UN element of the triple lock is probably not a bad idea.
Yeah, but it should go to a referendum, Stephen. It shouldn't be just made.
Oh,
that decision
shouldn't
be made.
Neutrality should be a referendum issue. I fucking despair at the idea of what's going to be said in that campaign. But anyway, that's a whole other argument.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But you know, the Americans have ROTC, they have their army and their naval service and things like that going in and effectively, I was going to say conscripting and indoctrinating, but certainly recruiting students to go, well, you know, we'll train you to do this, that and the other, we'll pay you to this, that and the other, we'll teach you this, that and the other. And a lot of people take it up because they're coming from, you know, very deprived backgrounds and it's really the only way of getting a second job and getting money to support yourself for a lot of these people, unfortunately. So I don't know if that's the best idea to bring in here, but there was a point made by one of your other callers about, you know, effectively beating them into submission, beating these candidates into submission and making them good, law-abiding, upstanding citizens in society. I'd love to see the definitions of things like that.
Yeah,
you know, and complacency upon people.
Jason, do you believe that the army or military or conscription or boot camps or whatever it happens to be, do you believe that it brings or it gives young people discipline who might otherwise be wayward?
A percentage, yeah. You'll always get a percentage. I mean, if you put 10 young fellas in, okay, and I'm going to give young people the benefit of the doubt because I've spent a bit of time with them. I think most of them are good people. You get six that'll love it and it will really change their lives. which you'll get four. And them four will make their lives bloody hell. What do you do with the four that do not want to be there? It's forced labour on them. You know, and that's how they'll perceive it. And the fourth thing goes wrong. I mean, the kids of the 70s and 60s are only getting through their trauma now as adults. So do we want to be doing this again in another 20 years' time? You have a load of messed up teenagers going around shooting each other or killing themselves because of the time they were forced into boot camp. Mm. We're dealing with different teenagers nowadays, Niall, than we were 20, 30 years ago. You know that way?
Would you fight for your country, Jace? Somebody said this to me going back about 3 years ago. So if we were invaded tomorrow, I know that's probably never going to happen, but if we were invaded by Russia tomorrow, for example, for whatever reason, and you know, and Micheál Martin came out of the doll and stood on the podium and said, there's a gun there for everybody, let's fight for your country. Would you fight for your country?
Like a light, and I encourage all my kids to do it as well.
Stephen, would you fight for your country? Would you pick up a gun and stand on the beach?
I suppose I'd like to think I would, but I don't know, to be frank and honest.
Sorry, Stephen.
From my country, I would not cross the water to invade another man's land for anybody.
Yeah.
I would stand on my beach and I would protect my land, my family, my way of life, my home. That's what anybody who's living here who calls this a home should do. Not run off to fight a big... These proxy wars that are being fought, Noel, we all know what they're doing, right? The Americans are selling them the bullets and the bandages.
Well, of course, money.
But they're telling Israelis are great, keep it up, and at the same time they're building pontoons, let's feed the starving, what's left of them.
Yeah.
88,000 buildings are being flattened.
I know.
In Gaza, and it's called a just war. But, you know...
No war is a just war. No war.
And they want us now to start sending their kids off. Are the rich going to have to send our kids as well? Or is it just going to be working class like always? Cannon fodder. Because what will the rich do? They'll stick them the far side of the planet in a college and say that it's a necessity and blah, 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 and they won't be forced to do it. Now, this is all just aimed at these people at the top looking down at us and saying, this is what we're going to do. And now we're going to do this to your kids. It wasn't bad enough what the priest done to most of us. Now we're going to do this to your kids. So there's another traumatised bunch of second people in 20, 30 years' time.
Okay, well, hang on a second. Thank you, Jason. Stephen, stay with me. Let me just go to Madeline as well. Madeline, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Madeline, you know, I mean, what they're talking about in Britain is national service. It's kind of different to conscription in a sense, but although it is compulsory if you don't have a job and don't have an education, but it's also voluntary as well. I mean, do you think it would benefit young people, particularly in those areas where they may not have a future otherwise?
I would have said prior to COVID and illegal immigration, I would have said yes. It would have been great to have people in a kind of a community-based national service, but not now, because going back to 2014 in Sicily, when the guy talked about the New World Order, the globalist army, and I think that's the direction this is heading in, because George Soros has been plugging this idea now for a long time.
Well, it's not just George Soros, but there has been suggestions by other people, and there's a suggestion in the EU, by the way, for an EU army or an EU defence force of some description. That has been a suggestion for a long time, even though they denied it at the time of the Lisbon Treaty. But so, I mean, you are right. It's probably heading in that direction at some point. But we are a neutral country. I believe we should remain a neutral country. We shouldn't be involved in that.
I definitely, in this present climate, would not agree with compulsory conscription. But it's really easy for the governments to say this now, because if they were doing a better job running the countries, we wouldn't have the feral people we have running around the country. Industry and trade has been destroyed by COVID. There's no apprenticeships. AI and computers are taking over things. So there's very little out there for people. So they have to look at this from a peaceful point of view rather than a war point of view. But compulsory conscription is not a good idea.
What about Stephen is talking about? You know, he's not talking about the military aspect of it. In other words, you're not going to be sending your kids off to Afghanistan or wherever it happens to be, but certainly it would teach them a skill, you know, whereby they might learn to be a mechanic or whatever it happens to be.
No, I would agree with a civic-based national service, community service.
Well, I think that's what Stephen is recommending, isn't it? He's not talking about the military aspect.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Yes, no, I absolutely agree. And all young adults should learn how to be respectful and have responsibilities. They don't have that anymore because they live in a very entitled world now. Absolutely agree with community-based national service, but definitely not compulsory, not in this present climate at all. And I think Sunak it's an election ploy with him now to let people think that he's, by doing this or suggesting this, he's going to be able to sort out all the shit that's going on that was caused by their governments in the first place.
I don't know if Sunak thinks this is actually really a good idea. As somebody else suggested, maybe he's doing it because he doesn't want to get elected. Although, heaven forbid, if the Labour Party get into power in Britain, God only knows what could happen. That would be the wokest Britain we've ever seen. I don't think that'll last. Here's my prediction, by the way. The Labour Party will win the election. Starmer will get in, but another election will happen before the end of the year or possibly the start of next year, and Nigel Farage will become the Prime Minister of Britain. That's my prediction for the future. Anyway, because I think Nigel is going to be focused on America more so than Britain for the next 6 months or so. But I do believe that eventually he will obviously lead the party. And I do believe that he will go into power eventually in Britain because it's going to get so bad. Things are going to get so bad. Anyway.
Yeah, and everybody is just firefighting. Now, but I do know people from other parts of Europe, including Romania, where 18, they were conscripted into the army over there. And they will tell you it made them the men they are now. Mm. They're responsible, they're respectful. But it was a different climate, a different time. It's very, very different now.
Well, let me go to somebody who was in the army, Morris, a good friend of the show. Morris, hi, how are you?
Niall, how are you doing? Congratulations on the campaign. You're kicking those fellas' arses and they only attack you when they're threatened by you.
Yeah, well,
you're
doing a great job. As I said already, we're number 2 out of 23 in Boyle Sports betting at the moment. So if we can keep that up and that turns into votes next week, we could be in a very good position. But getting back to the army, Mark, wait, I mentioned earlier on, and I don't want to make any disparaging comments about people who joined the army a long time ago, but if you go back to the 1960s and 70s, to me, when I was a young fella, the army was a place that young fellas went who had left school early, who didn't have maybe the brightest future in the world. You know, they weren't the most educated in the world. So they were sent into the army, you know, to learn a skill and to be good men. You know what I mean? Primarily men at the time, of course. And now it's men and women. So, I mean, what harm would national service do when, you know, it made a lot of good men out of those young fellas that went in back in the 70s and 80s?
Exactly, and they went on to have great careers in the army, and for some others it didn't work out. But I was in the army, I come from a military family, and there's nothing better than seeing 30 guys walking in off the street, being recruited into the army, swearing an allegiance to your country, and then they train you up for 6 months, and they basically turn you into a fighting machine. They're taking you from civilian...
Well, I don't know whether that's a good thing or not. But go on, yeah.
No, well, in the sense of the training, the physicality, the camaraderieship, and then you're getting tooled up and trained in weapons. And it's a great achievement. Like I still am friends with people, and I left the army over 40 years ago, and I'm still friends with people that I joined up with in 1979. And I think national service would be a great thing because it teaches you discipline, it'll get you physically fit, and you'll be tooled up as in trained and brought out to the shooting ranges and shown how to fire a weapon. That, listen, we're never going to be invaded, that's for sure. If somebody wants to take this country, they'll just press a button and we won't be here anymore. Right? But the Israelis now seem to have a problem with us because we're standing up for a nation of people. Everybody in Israel does national service for 2 years. Everybody in Cyprus does national service for 2 years. So I think it'd be a good thing for young people. I really do. And it do the country and the world a good as well. Teach them discipline, camaraderieship, responsibility. And like you said, there was young people that grew up and had nothing. They had an arse in their trousers in the 50s, 60s and 70s. They went on to be great citizens and great army men. Look at this clown on the wrong side of the road.
Okay, I'm not going to deny that, but the idea, and Madeline doesn't believe it's an idea, a good idea, or nor Stephen for that, to make it compulsory. Yeah. Now, of course, Rishi Sunak is talking about it. He's talking about it being compulsory for those who don't have a job or don't want to further education.
That's just somebody looking for attention. How can I distract the people? How can I turn the people on each other? And I'll tell you something about one guy that you like, Mr. Trump. He dodged conscription.
He did, yeah.
Nobody knew that healthcare could be so complicated.
Trump was a failure on healthcare.
Hundreds of thousands of black Americans lost healthcare insurance. That is outrageous.
And if he's president again, he would cancel insurance for millions more of us.
We cannot go back. President Biden and Vice President Harris have lowered healthcare premiums and expanded coverage for black families. They also capped the price of insulin at $35. Joe Biden is getting the job done for people just like me.
I'm Joe Biden, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Biden for president.
Right.
He's not the only one. My cousin did as well. I have a cousin in America.
Yeah.
And he did the same thing many years ago.
There's nothing worse than being a coward. It's the lowest form any man can stoop to, is be a coward and to get out of something. If you're meant to go and fight for your country, you're meant to go and fight for it.
Yeah, but now my cousin dodged at the time when they were going to Vietnam. So, you know, that was a long time ago.
So did Trump and the Korean War. He dodged them all.
Yeah, but Morris, with great respect, we all know the Vietnam War was unnecessary. I mean, you wouldn't have wanted your kids, you know, at 18 or 19 years of age to be sent out to the Vietnam War, would you?
Every war was unnecessary. We shouldn't have had to fight for our freedom in this country, but we have to. And we did it. You know? O'Connell Street ran red for us to have freedom today. And then some people laugh at them and criticise them.
You're almost suggesting we should be cannon fodder for the country. Do you know what I mean? And that's what Stephen was saying earlier on. Or was it Jason that we shouldn't be?
I told you many times before, I would pick up a weapon tomorrow, whether it be a knife or a blade or a rifle or a gun, anything. And I will defend this land. Because that's what I'm proud to be, an Irishman. And I'd die for my country in a heartbeat.
Madeline, would you die for your country? Would you get out on the beach, Madeline, with a gun?
Well, it's very interesting you should ask that. Would I fight for my country? I'm fighting for my country for the last 4 years with the pen.
Good woman.
Which is the only weapon I have at the moment.
But okay, and I get that, and I'd like to think I am too. But I fight for the country with my mouth. But in saying that, you know, if war broke out tomorrow, Madeline, and, you know, Micheál Martin jumped out onto the steps and with Simon Harris and says, right, there's guns for everybody outside the GPO and in a load of trucks. The Russians are on their way. Would you run out onto Dollymount Beach?
I would pick up arms if I had to, definitely.
No, well, problem. Good for you. There you go. No. Long live the memory of Countess Markovic.
No, absolutely. As I say, the pen, they say, is mightier than the sword. And you know the sort of things I've been doing.
I do. And by the way, most wars nowadays are fought online, it seems to be. I mean, we have a very new strategic type of war. Yeah, sorry, Morris.
Sorry, there's nothing sexier than having a woman that's willing to die for a country. There's a brave woman on the radio talking about.
Stephen, are you listening to Madeline? You said no, Stephen. Yes.
Yeah. I go on the beach with Madeline.
Yeah. I think I'm with Madeline in terms of fighting with the pen more than the knife or gun or anything like that. I think it's a much more effective way of doing things. You know, would I defend myself if, you know, somebody stormed the beaches or, you know, landed in front of my house? Absolutely. Would I actively go out of my way to kill them because I'm chasing after them? Then no, I probably wouldn't.
Well, they're coming to kill you. They're coming to kill you. So you might as well get forced.
You know, then I will defend myself.
What was that famous story in World War II? I watched it. It was in some movie. And, you know, they were on the front line and they were all shooting each other, the Germans and the British or whoever it was, they were all shooting each other on the front line. And there was only two or three people left. And the British guy gets up and he's walking with his rifle in his hand. And next minute, the German guy, it was a bit foggy, they couldn't see each other. And then they came face to face and they both had a rifle pointing at each other. And the two of them were only kids, 19 years of age.
Mm.
And the two of them ended up sitting down and having a cigarette. Neither of them killed each other.
It's this kind of story about, you know, like the Christmas Day peace thing in the trenches and so on.
Football match. But like I said, Noel, the people that send you to war are sending you to die. You know, they're the ones with the problem.
Why are you so gung-ho for it, Morris? If you know that you're not the one who should be out there, it's governments, it's men primarily, who are making these decisions on your behalf to tell you to get out and fight for your country. You know, and it's a man on the other side, most likely, usually men, on the other side, who's sending people to attack you. And though, I mean, when you take, for example, what's happened in Ukraine and Russia, right? We all know that Putin is a dictator, you know, but there are young men, you know, from Russia, young lads, 17, 18, 19 years of age, being sent out on the front line. No idea whether even there, probably some of them, right?
Exactly.
And to lose their lives. You know, the same as young men and women in Ukraine.
I saw people, Noel.
Sorry, Madeline.
It's always young working class. It's never the elitist. No. And someone said to me this morning, I was talking about this, and somebody said, you know why they're doing this? It's so they can send all the men out to Ukraine because they've all been killed. And I said, no, they haven't. They're all living here. They haven't been killed at all. They're all living here.
There's a lot of them living here,
yeah. War dodgers. But anyway, no, there's no war, I don't think, that wasn't not unnecessary, you know?
All right. Well, Morris, thank you for that. I'm cutting a bit short here because I'm running out of time. But Maureen, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall. How are you?
Good. Nice to talk to you again, Maureen. It's been a little while. Maureen, back to the original question. Do you agree with the idea of national service or mandatory or compulsory national service?
No.
Okay.
There was a time, I'd be inside of Madeline here, I've been listening to her. There was a time when I thought, maybe that years ago, back in the day, when, that doesn't sound too bad, you know? Yeah, it's something maybe like the years we had, and we'd say, like World War II, the Home Guard, they called them, okay? But what I'm saying today, no, because this is, again, this is directly from NATO. The NATO countries are signing up for this, this conscription. And
well, we're not part of NATO, and I don't, I hope we never will be part of
it. It doesn't matter. That's where it's coming from.
No, I'm aware of that.
When they were talking, yes, it is. When they were talking about a European army, they were correct. They weren't lying to us. They're called European battle groups. And our defence force has actually been out, I can't remember where it was now, but they've been out on two occasions with this European battle group. And I, for one, the day those traitors in Leinster House stand with me with a gun in their hand, I'll stand with a gun until the day they do it. I don't.
You'd happily run out onto a beach with a gun in your hand?
For my children and grandchildren, so they will have a country that I grew up in, free people, not under this tyranny that every one of us are going under in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And until the day the traitors, they stand with me with a gun. They can kiss my arse. You think I'm going to be a cannon fodder for those traitors? You must be joking me. I look at my children and grandchildren and say, well, you know, the day they do it, I'll do it. Or you send your family in with me on the front line, every single one of you.
What do you think of what Stephen is saying? That, you know, he doesn't necessarily agree with the idea of conscription or a military service, but the idea that, you know, a young fellow maybe or a young one who's 18, who is no job, no future, doesn't bother going to education, sitting at home playing the PlayStation, whatever it is, should go into sort of some community work, working with the fire department, working in the hospital, maybe in the army, you know, for a spell for 3 or 4 weeks as well. But, you know, a little bit of everything for a year to put some, you know, discipline in them.
I'm saying no. This is conscription. This is making and forcing somebody to go into maybe something they don't want to do. Like I said, there was a time when I might have said, yes, that sounds a good idea, but not anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That has changed radically for me. I have a totally different outlook. And you have to ask now, people who have been through war, right? I know I come from a military background as well. Royal Air Force, Irish Army, British Navy, British Army, it's all my military background, it's all military. And my father was the man who taught me about war, because he was a navigator on the Lancaster in World War II.
Yeah.
He was there, he witnessed and saw it. My granduncle was injured in the Somme. Great-granduncle, sorry. And he lost a leg in the Ardennes when they patched him up and sent him back out again. So I had a cousin on a nuclear sub for 6 months under sea. They didn't know where they were. So I know all about war. And I'm not going to be cannon fodder or my family for these traitors while they sit back and watch the rest of us be slaughtered if we came to war, just to suit them, and because they are so power hungry. It's always follow the money. Money is war.
Okay.
And war is money.
Okay, we'll stay there a second. Let me just bring Billy in. Madeline, stay with me if you want to. Let me just bring Billy into this. Billy, you know, people kind of laughed during the Lisbon referendum. And I know that Madeline had mentioned this, and so had Maureen, that people kind of laughed during the Lisbon referendum when, you know, there were warnings about an EU army. But now, I suppose it's nearly a reality. We and our elected representatives need to maintain our independence and our neutrality. But it is a threat.
Sorry, Niall, you're bringing in, you're conflating a couple of different things here. So the topic was on conscription.
Okay, but Madeline brought that in, the idea that, you know, of a European army, which is becoming more of a reality. Anyway, okay, but the point of it is, and that's the fear, when you have national conscription or you have, this idea of, you know, compulsory national service, that, you know, we don't want our kids going to war. A lot of people don't want their kids going to war.
So, hold on a second, Niall, just to name out some countries. Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Finland.
Yeah, I mentioned them all earlier on. Yeah.
The Nordic countries that we're all being told that we need to be more like on a regular basis. All of these countries have conscription or some form of conscription.
Yeah, Greece, Latvia, Estonia, Austria. Yeah.
Taking Finland as an example, Finland does a year's service for the state and trains people up to be mechanics and things like that within the defence forces. They operate on what's called total defence, and it's a strategy that they have evolved over the last couple of hundred years while they were a neutral country, not that they are a neutral country anymore. National service in the UK was conscription by another name. If you've ever read up on Michael Caine did national service. He ended up with the Royal Green Jackets in Korea, I believe, for a 6-month stint. So national service was conscription in the UK, just by a different name. It's not going to work this day and age in the UK or in Ireland the ties that bring a society together, especially in the UK and in Ireland, aren't there. And also in Ireland, we have never had a tradition of conscription into military service. We do have a very proud military tradition in Ireland going back to the 1800s, the Wild Geese, Wellington's army, but that tradition of military service is not here in this country anymore, so it would not work.
What about what
but
Steve...
That again is my point. If you're going to do national service, it shouldn't be, I'm recruiting you now to send you off to the front line of something somewhere else. You know, that's not what it's for. You know, the same with the Home Guard back in Britain as well during the war. They weren't there to be shipped off. They were there to protect the borders of England, you know. So yeah, you can do military national service, but without sending people as cannon fodder. That's not going to fly in Britain. It's not going to fly here.
And the other side of things is the reason that the military forces work in the West at the moment is that they are volunteer predominantly.
Yeah.
So outside of those countries that have conscription or national service for a year, the rest of the military forces is a volunteer. So anyone who serves has volunteered to do so.
How do you think this plan is going to work? How do you think this plan is going to work for Rishi Sunak?
It's fluff. It's trying to appeal to a demographic in the UK that believes that a return, and funnily enough, the demographic that he's appealing to, it would have been their parents that may have done national service.
Mm.
So they're thinking that, oh, national service.
Yeah, working class people.
Not necessarily working class, but
is he not trying to appeal? Well, that's what I'm saying to you. Is he not trying to appeal to all those areas, those parts of Britain, those housing estates with high unemployment rates and 18-year-olds causing mayhem?
Like a typical Tory Niall, he's not looking at the root cause of why the issue is there. These issues haven't evolved because national service was removed. These issues have evolved because of underinvestment in areas, underemployment in areas, bad governmental policies over 50 plus years. It's not because national service was done away with in the 1960s. It's because of government after government has caused these issues. And there's many, many issues there. I'm only reading what he said today.
It's literally coming up on Sky News. And he says national service will keep young people out of trouble.
How?
Well, I'm just telling you what he's saying. That's what he's saying.
Exactly. But the question that needs to be asked is how? Mm-hmm. When I texted in and Elaine saw the message to call me back, I said, do you want to take those young people who are causing problems and train them in the use of firearms, which is what military service is for? You train them how to use guns. You train them in...
I'll read this bit for you. Rishi Sunak has been asked about one of the biggest talking points in the election thus far, his national service policy. The Prime Minister says when it comes to service, doing something that provides young people with skills and opportunities will transform their lives. I believe service gives you purpose. He also said it will be a rite of passage for young people and just keeps them out of trouble.
Now, this is a typical kind of the army can fix it or the military can fix it. This is a suggestion from Rishi Sunak. It's the same thing that when the riots in Dublin were there, send in the army. When the Garda cars were rammed in Dublin last year, send in the army. Sending in the army to fix your societal problems does not work. The army are not bloody social workers. They're not trained to be social workers. They're not trained to analyse the social ills that have gone on in these areas and fix what is probably...
I think people just say that. I know it's cliche, but I think people just say send in the army because the army are meant to be there as a backup service, I suppose, when we have an emergency situation.
Yes, Niall. They're meant to be there as a backup for a fire service.
Remember when the bins weren't being collected. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, well, that was way before my time, Niall, but I have seen the reeling in the years that had it.
But it wasn't before my time. The army went around collecting the bins at one stage.
Yeah, and now they've gone into the prisons as well. When the prison officers,
yeah, I could argue with you to some degree. They're not bin men, you know, and they're not prison officers either.
They're not bin men. They're not prison officers.
Like
they're,
you said, they're not social workers. You know what I mean?
Yes, they're the last thing that you want to be calling. But you really want the army to be your social workers to take care of these social ills that we've been allowed to develop. The army don't want this job. I guarantee you the British Army don't want this job.
Madeline, do you believe that national service even, you know,
kind of puts discipline into people. Do you believe it has any purpose whatsoever?
Discipline begins in the home.
I agree.
Climate, but that chap, I can't remember his name,
Billy.
Is saying exactly what I said. This is an election ploy. And it's actually a very weak statement from a current prime minister right now to keep kids out of trouble. The country is in fucking bits. And he uses this weak one-liner to say, oh, this new ploy will keep people out of trouble. This is ridiculous. This is years and years of government doing a shit job and not providing a future for kids. Now, this is the magic answer to everything. And it's the same here. As I said there earlier on, there has been no investment in trades or industry here. There's nothing for anybody because of the governments have been too busy trying to keep up with what was going on in Europe, and they've let this country slip into an abyss.
But, you know, I wouldn't feel too bad about it to some degree if we actually invested in the military in this country or our defence forces, but we don't invest in it. We actually have very little investment in it. We don't treat them well at all.
The budgets that are spent on the defence forces in this country is 0.2%. 0.2%. The EU average is 2%. So you have the likes of the Baltic nations, which are a lot poorer than Ireland, spending a lot more on defence than Ireland does. Now, they are in NATO, in fairness, but even so, if you look at the other neutral countries in Europe, if you look at Switzerland and Austria, again, spending in excess of huge amounts of money compared to what we spent. If you try to bring national service into Ireland, it simply wouldn't work. The resources are not there to train and look after these people.
But that's the point I'm making. If you brought national service in, the idea is that Johnny goes in because he's not got an education or he left school early. Excuse me. And the idea is he learns how to fix a car. Or he learns to be, you know, an engineer or whatever it happens to be. They're not going to learn that currently in the Irish Army, really, are they?
Well, if you send Johnny in into national service, into the army, anywhere in the world, the first thing Johnny is going to do is learn how to march, dress himself, look after himself properly, and shoot a gun. And after that, Johnny will potentially learn additional skills. But as Johnny is a conscript, he is not going to get the higher value training because he'll be out the door in 6 or 7 months. So if they're going to invest in these people to teach them a skill longer term, they'll need a longer term time commitment.
Billy, you know more about the army than I do, but isn't that why a lot of people in Ireland, young people in Ireland, travel to Britain and join the British Army rather than the Irish Defence Forces? Because the opportunities are better.
Well, the people that travel to Britain for this, Niall, and I've known a few of them in my time, have gone because they wanted to go overseas. They wanted to be in an army that was actually deploying overseas into combat situations.
Not necessarily. I know people who went into it to get an engineering.
I'm speaking of my personal knowledge of people who went overseas.
I know that many years ago. I know I have two uncles who went to the British Army 2 years ago. Sorry, go ahead, Stephen.
Sorry, but that's, you know, the last round of advertising that went out for the Irish Army, it was all, you know, come see the world, come learn a skill, be the person that you want to be kind of a thing. You know, and there's nothing wrong with that if you're actually going to do it. You know, the British Army and the Irish armies are massively underfunded and massively under kind of skilled and trained. You know, if we were doing things properly, there wouldn't be people leaving the military or the Navy or anything like that. And all of this is, as everyone has been saying, is to cover up for the failures that they've been doing in managing their country, you know, in terms of their health, their education, their prison service, the migration services, whatever other thing you can think of, the bins, for Christ's sake, flood management, you know, all of this is to cover up for their stupidity and their neglect of all of the services. And as I said to you the last time I was on, when society isn't happy and healthy, that's when the shit hits the fan, and then we see things like large moves to the far right and so on, because people are pissed off and they see, or they are directed to, you know, some group or some person that is causing all the problems.
That's why I did an interview yesterday with the Irish Times, and that's exactly what I was talking about. Although I think actually you worded it better than I did. But it's this idea, why have we seen this problem where we're at the moment? Why has immigration, for example, become such a big issue, right? And the reason it's become a big issue is not just because of the mismanagement of it. That's the really bad part of it, right? But it's the idea that over the last 10 or 11 years, and when I've been talking to people over the last 4 or 5 weeks, their lives are not as good as they should be. When I have a woman who has cancer and can't get an appointment for a year or whatever it is, you know, or somebody can't have, their kids can't afford a house in the country anymore, or, and they're angry. They're angry at the government. They're angry at the world. They're angry at the cost of living because they don't have the extra few quid in their pocket anymore that they, because they're on the same salary they were on 8 years ago and everything costs more. So they're angry anyway. And then all you have to do is give them a reason to be even angrier. Like, for example, if we were in a country where the health service was brilliant, the cost of living was a lot lower, taxes were lower, you know, and you got a better service and had a better life generally all around, the immigration issue wouldn't have been such a big issue. I think it would be still an issue, don't get me wrong, because we have to, because we have to, you know, enforce laws that we have. But it wouldn't have been the issue that it is, if you know what I mean.
But we'd be much better off and prepared. We'd have houses and different services for these people. We'd have created the system that would be able to say, well, you need this visa and that visa and that visa, or you need this, that and the other in order to be able to come into the country. And by the way, you're fleeing Somalia and you're at war. Okay, come on in. You've got a year in this house. Off you go. We'll look after you, kind of thing. But we're trying to do all of that from a system that is completely and utterly fucked. And that's why there are tents on the streets.
Yes, sorry, Billy.
The biggest issue that we have in this country is the amount of tax that is paid. So at the highest rate of income you're paying, or highest rate of tax, you're paying about 52% when you take USC, when you take PAYE and PRSI into account. You're paying that tax and you don't see where it goes. And then you pay your motor tax on top of that. And then you pay your property tax on top of that.
And your VAT that you're paying on all your goods.
You pay your 21% VAT or 23% VAT, depending on what the product is. You're paying tax on everything. And then you don't see a benefit. There's potholes on the road. So you go over a pothole, your tire bursts, you have to go and pay for a new tire. But you pay the motor tax. There shouldn't be, but I mean,
look, one thing in life you're sure of is death and taxes. But Billy, I did work that out one day with somebody. We worked it out on somebody earning 700 quid and how much tax you actually pay out the 700 quid. And it worked out something like 500 and something. Because when you take into consideration that everything you buy is 23% on it, not only that, by the way, whatever money you have left over after all of those taxes that you just paid, your VAT and everything else, and your income tax and everything else, the money that you've left over, if you put it in a bank, they'll charge you dirt tax, right? Okay. Yep. And even if you die, they'll tax it again.
Inheritance tax.
Yeah. By the way, I always believed if I was the leader of this country, I would abolish inheritance tax. I would work it. I know I understood, by the way, there's lots of loopholes there. And I do understand how if you have no inheritance tax, it can be abused, right? So you'd have to make sure the law is steadfast. But I would abolish inheritance tax because why should my father, for example, work all his life and earn, you know, and have, say, 300,000 in the savings and say, when I die, I want to give that to Niall. And then me have to go and pay tax on it, right?
I'll make a comment to Niall. Taxes like inheritance tax and taxes like that.
Double taxation.
Really only affect. But it really only affects people below a certain income bracket that cannot afford to hire an accountant to look after their estate. Because if you are wealthy enough, you will hire an accountant, you will put whatever you
will
have
avoid
into
it.
A trust.
Yeah.
That trust will be handed over to your children and so on and so forth. You will not pay taxes and your children will not pay taxes.
But we are taxed way too much. And this comes back to what I'm sort of saying, Billy and Stephen. When you tax people that much money, as you rightly said, 52% there, Billy, if you're on the higher income or higher level, and then they see they're getting nothing for their taxes or they're getting bad service for the taxes, but they see a government spending, you know, over 2 billion, for example, you know, paying it out to hotels to accommodate somebody at 76 euro a night, you know, and that's just for accommodation for asylum seekers and refugees. They're going, hold on for a second. I don't agree to this. This is not what I pay tax for. I pay tax to give me better services too, you know. And that's what makes people angry.
When you see 6 or 7 billion going to multiple NGOs that cover the same
seven billion,
bigger part.
Well, wouldn't need as many NGOs if the systems were actually fucking working.
I know we go on about NGOs. There are some good NGOs, can I put it?
Because government doesn't want to deal with a lot of this shit.
There's a lot of NGOs out there, Stephen. I'm not going to start naming names because people won't like me. But there's a lot of NGOs out there that I would absolutely defund in the morning. And I'd say, if you want to represent that portion of the population, of those people in the population, or that particular ideology in the population, you pay for it yourself or go out and get donations.
But how many homeless NGOs?
Are funded by donations as well, but anyhow.
Sorry. Yeah, go ahead, Billy. Sorry.
how many homeless NGOs do you need in Dublin?
Well, homelessness is an industry in this country.
Yes, but how many do you need? Like, I couldn't name multiple,
yeah,
but how many do you need to cover the same area that the government has allowed an NGO to exist in?
But what the government does is, it's easy for the government to turn around and say, yeah, we give them money and they'll do the job we're meant to be doing.
Yes, but the big issue is each one of these NGOs is a CEO. Each one of those CEOs is on serious coin.
Oh, yeah.
Funded by the taxpayer directly.
Yep.
And it is a case that when there is a duplication of the services being provided by those NGOs, they should look at them. There should be a registrar that looks at them and rationalises them down to what is required.
But to take one for example,
just very quickly, because we've got off the subject.
The community, you know, they would have their regional setups. You know, say they based in Dublin city centre, then they have regional setups for all of the different electoral areas. That works in Dublin. It doesn't work in Galway or anywhere like that, where the space is frankly far too big. All of the youth and community stuff that I've interacted with in Galway, for example, one organization is covering the entire size of Dublin in that county, and it doesn't work. You know, so you do need branches and multiplications and things like that. You do need people spread out across the system. You know,
okay. Okay. Well, hang on, because we got off the subject a little bit. Let me just go to Alan as well. Getting back to National Service. Sorry, Alan. Hi. How are you?
Nobody knew that healthcare could be so complicated.
Trump was a failure on healthcare.
Hundreds of thousands of Black Americans lost healthcare insurance. That is outrageous.
And if he's president again, he would cancel insurance for millions more of us.
We cannot go back. President Biden and Vice President Harris have lowered healthcare premiums and expanded coverage for Black families. They also capped the price of insulin at $35. Joe Biden is getting the job done for people just like me.
I'm Joe Biden, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Biden for President.
Hi, Niall. How's everything going? I just want to wish you the very best of luck on June 7th. You're doing an absolutely fantastic job. Yeah, you're really pushing the student, and it's great to have the voice there just to...
thanks very much. Thanks. It's like David and Goliath. Anyway.
That's what you're doing, you know.
Yeah, that's it. So, Alan, in relation to National Service, do you think it's a good idea? The idea for people who would be kind of 18, unemployed, no future, no education, or very little.
Yeah.
Do you think it's a good idea?
Well, see, like, the thing is, like, if you look at the situation, like we have 400,000 people stuck in their homes at the moment. To have a national service plan to get people into the workforce, to give them that bit of experience would be a great idea. But, like, with everything that's happening in Europe at the moment, like, you've an Irish government, you've leaders that are calling out Russia, they're calling out Israel, they're calling out countries that can literally press the button and blow a country up in a second. And... like, we have to kind of assess and kind of look at this and say, well, like, how far can we let these people kind of speak on our behalf? Like, you know what I mean? When me or Martin starts calling out Russia and when the government takes sides, like, they aren't speaking for the whole general public whenever to do that. And so what they're actually doing...
They're not speaking for most of the general public, because poll after poll has suggested the general public are in favour of neutrality in all ways, by the way, politically and otherwise.
They're
in favour of minding our own business to some degree.
I'm not sure a lot of people understand about, you know, the differences between political and military neutrality.
Sorry, Stephen, there is no difference between political and military neutrality. You are either neutral or you are not neutral.
I'm inclined to agree, but I think a lot of people draw distinctions between us because we've always had distinctions between us. I don't necessarily disagree with you, mind you.
Sorry for interrupting this on that point. Sorry, Alan. Just stay with me, Alan. Billy, do you think recognize the state of Palestine is military neutral or is politically neutral?
No, it's not
a neutral stance.
It's not a neutral stance. You're taking the same as personally. I think Russia has committed absolute atrocities in Ukraine, but as a neutral country, the government should not be involved. If we are truly neutral, we should not be involved.
Well, we should be funding humanitarian aid, of course, yes.
If we were truly neutral, Niall, we would be signatories to the 1907 Hague Convention on Neutrality. We would take defence seriously and we would defend ourselves as other neutral states do. We do not. We have used neutrality for about 100 years as an excuse not to take positions on things and not to spend money to defend ourselves adequately. We are more than happy to freeload.
Okay, well, let's continue the point you're making, Alan, in relation to national service. So, and you were talking about neutrality and you brought that into it, which is it's a fair thing to bring into it. But in relation to national service, would it do any good at all to send, you know, kids that might not have a good future, be they male or female, by the way, into some sort of national service program for a year?
See, I'll be honest, I have a few friends that went into the army to join the FCA. They absolutely loved us.
Yeah.
Like, they took an offer.
I loved it. I loved the FCA. I was in the FCA. I loved it.
Like, they enjoy the whole, like, geo-navigation, like all of the, like, kind of different war scenarios. But, like, at the same time, like, I think for, like, any 18 or 19-year-old, they probably find the whole experience enjoyable. But, like, at the same time, if it does come to a conscription base, like the way the EU is doing everything now, like, they have a one-shoe-fits-all approach. So it's basically, they could basically turn around and say, okay, well, it's now Ireland's moral obligation to get involved in the war with Russia, you know? And that's what we have to be very careful with.
Mm. No, I think we are getting to a very critical point where neutrality is concerned. And I know that Simon Harris and Micheál Martin are talking about the triple lock. And I know, Billy, you talked about that in depth the other day, so we're not going to go back into it again. Let me just go to, stay there, please, Alan, if you want. Let me just go to Nuala. Nuala, hi, how are you?
I'm not too bad at all, you know. I think the whole problem, it goes back to our second level education. We have only one stream, shoveling everybody to third level. And like, you know, not every young lad is academically inclined.
No, that's true.
You can notice the amount of dropouts at third level. And that means that there's something wrong with our, you know, our second level education system. We've put the vocational schools and we've made them into similar secondary schools, shoveling everybody to college. Went into the hospital the other day. I have a relation in the hospital, and there were six nurses sitting down. So I said to them, student nurses, I said, I suppose you can go off to Australia. And they were kind of smiling away. And I said, you know, you going off to Australia, that will mean that you'll be replaced. And the people you'll be replacing, you will bring in their families. So we're educating people in third level to export them, where we should have a better education system at second level. So young lads will find something they're interested in at that level. You know,
But Nuala, we do have a decent second level education in this country. I mean, compared to other countries, it's fairly good. I mean, hang on, Billy. There's always going to be those, a small percentage, who have no interest in education, or maybe they're just not academically inclined, you know, and they want to leave school early.
We have the highest ratio of third level graduates in Europe.
Yeah,
in Ireland, we have the highest percentage of third level graduates.
No. I agree. But what Nuala is saying, by the way, Billy, there's this thing in Ireland where, you have to go to college. You don't have to go to college.
What I was going to say is back, my grandmother was a nurse. She did a nursing apprenticeship. You can't do a nursing apprenticeship anymore. You have to go to third level. You know, there's a lot. We've changed the education system to suit the requirements to have a third level system that charges fees or did charge fees, and, you know, it can't afford to fund itself anymore. So it's getting people in from across the world to fund third level education in this country.
And there's the other thing. I know a guy who's a mechanic, and he was telling me that he does his first year, you know, I think it's, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, in the garage, and the second 2 years are in college doing the theory and all that kind of, and then he's back in the garage or something for the fourth year. And I'm going, whatever happened to mechanics doing their apprenticeship in the garage for the 4 years? I said, it didn't do them any harm. They're fixing cars, aren't they?
Plumbers, electricians, and every other apprenticeship there, they all will go to a third level for a period.
That seems pointless.
Unnecessary. But I remember seeing in Glasgow, passing by a second level educational facility, where there was, you could see the lads working with big sheets of plywood, of 4x4s and all this. We don't have that in Ireland. We don't have milling machines and lathes and that in our second levels. We kind of, maybe a fella one might do a bit of mechanical drawing. We don't have the proper system at second level. And because it would mean a lot of investments. In Galway, they changed the ATU, which used to be for people not so much academic. Now they've changed it into the Atlantic University, and it's doing the same similar courses to what they're doing in the University of Galway. What are we at? You know, what are we at, really?
No, you are right. And we do need to invest in young people who are better with their hands than they are with their minds. So we do need to invest in young people. There's no doubt about that. And we're not doing it. And when it comes to woodwork, when it comes to, you know, I don't know, being a plumber, electrician, a mechanic or whatever it is. And I'm going to start stereotyping now by saying for women, but I won't, because women can do any of those things as well they want to do. But you know what I was going to say. But the point I'm trying to make is we should be doing more, and then we wouldn't have to ask this question about military service.
But you see, I think somebody was saying that in the educational system in Denmark, that guys and girls would be taught about cooking, would be taught about sewing, looking after themselves, how to use a washing machine. Like, we have a whole lot of students that pack all their dirty underwear and whatever into a bag and bring it home with them. I mean, who's going to want to live with anyone like that?
That's primarily men, I think, that do things like that. Although women can be just as dirty as well.
I'm living on Deliveroo. You know?
Absolutely. Alan, did you do an apprenticeship or did you go to college?
I went to college for 4 years, and I'll be honest, I got out of college, I got into the workplace, and then I was working with people who never went to college, and so I was looking at myself, and I looked at myself like a fool, and I said, you know what, I could have been working for the past 4 years, but instead I locked myself into the institute. So, like, college isn't the be-all and end-all, like, education isn't the be-all and end-all, and, like, I would highly recommend people to just get into the workforce, like, you know what I mean, like, there's just plenty of time for everything.
I know a guy who went to college. It was a son of a friend of mine who went to college. The kid didn't want to go to college. It was his father and mother that pressured him into going to college. And he did some engineering course that he probably had no interest in. He dropped out after 2 years. You know what I mean? It was pointless. It's just a waste of 2 years of his life. Let me go to Jackie. Jackie, hi, how are you?
I'm good now.
Okay, back to military service. Would it serve any purpose at all? I mean, obviously, I know what Richie is thinking about, whether the plan, Billy thinks it's a stupid plan, it's a pointless plan, you know, where you have these kind of swathes of, you know, housing estates, which are, you know, high unemployment rates with young fellas, particularly young boys, you know, walking around with nothing to do, you know, at 19 years of age. Would it serve any purpose to put them into the military?
I believe that this should have been done all back through the years. There should be a year, and that year could be so well served in the sense that put manners on some of the young ones that are leaving school now that don't even know how to take a command or to listen or take orders from anyone. It might put people or get another perspective for young ones leaving college leaving school. I think it's a great thing. It brings a whole new perspective to people. You know, that actually school now has become such a, how would you say, they don't answer back.
Yeah.
They don't take any kind of guidance. And suddenly,
whose fault is that?
Well,
whose fault is it that they don't take guidance, or whose fault is it that they don't? It starts at home. It starts with the parents.
100%. But then what you're saying is, you know.
Yes, there's been collective failures there. Agreed. But what you're saying is, we as a state are going to take these people in to military service because their parents have failed them to properly prepare them for life.
Yeah, but you have to be realistic. You have to remember that there's 30% of parents are not great. You know what I mean?
We hope then that after a year of conscription or military service, that these people will return and not fall back into their previous way of thinking and acting. We have no way of guaranteeing that this will work.
No, exactly. And 100%. But at least it could be a very good start, and it gives people a whole new, like there's so many different aspects to the army, and you can go into different types of, you know, be it mechanic, be it engineering, be it logistics.
But you just don't walk in the gate. You just don't walk in the gate and say, "I want to be a mechanic." You know, no, there's a process that's gone through.
Yeah, but it's. I know that there's no guarantee that this would make a difference, but it's still. I think it's something that it's only a year. You're only looking at a year here. And I know, like, say, my young lad at the minute is in TY. And I said to him, look, is there any way that there can be a week or 2 weeks done in the army or that? And he was going looking at that at the time. But to me, even at the TY, that if there was, say, a month or a couple of months done in the army, because it's a great organization. I'm sorry, I never was aimed to do it or get into the army at the time.
I have the absolute utmost respect for the Defence Forces and all the people that serve within the Defence Forces, but the Defence Forces is not a daycare for transitioners. The Defence Forces is not a babysitting service for wayward teens who come out of school. It can't be that. If someone comes out of school at 18...
The Defence Forces was. But Billy, go back 40 years ago. It was a centre for people who were wayward. There were a lot of people who were wayward went into the army and became good model people.
The Defence Forces is a career.
Absolutely.
It is a career. But someone volunteers to join the Defence Forces to build a career. If one of those 18-year-old wayward people that you have talked about says, I want to change my life, I want to go to the Defence Forces, I want to join and serve the country, by all means. While if his buddy beside him doesn't and you force him in, who do you think will get more out of that? Will it be the fella who voluntarily went in, or will it be the fella that you're forcing to go in who doesn't want to be there?
I don't know the answer to that question, but again, if I go back in time, and I said this at the start of the show, what I remember from the Defence Forces when I was a young fella, you know, it was, you know, fellas who had left after the group cert. I don't know whether you remember the group cert. So they left school after the group cert when they were 16 years of age. They had no education. They weren't academics. They, you know, but they were wonderful lads, right? They just went the wrong direction. A lot of them were forced into the army. Their parents forced them into the army. And some of them turned out to be good people.
My father had a very negative attitude towards the army because he had come from a time where lads had gone into the army and it was, as he termed it, the wasters that went into the army. It's not the case in the army anymore.
No, I'm not saying it is, but I'm just saying the army is a good foundation for discipline.
The army is a fantastic foundation, but as I said, the discipline is only there for people who voluntarily wish to join.
Okay, sorry, Jackie, go ahead.
Another point, actually, and it just came into my head there. I think it should be very important for someone, say, for joining the guards, for, you know, joining the guard, our guard force, that they would come from army experience. And that, to me, would make a huge difference for the Gardaí. That if you have served, you know, a particular a year or 2 years in the army, that then that would give you nearly like a card to straight into the guards.
Like a foundation or pre-training or whatever.
It would be a great basis because you're learning about weapons, you're learning about self-defense, you know, you have a lot of skills there straight away.
Okay, listen, lads, unfortunately I've run out of time. Thank you very much indeed, Jackie, and thank you very much indeed, Billy. I've got some WhatsApp messages coming in here. Hold on, I'm going to just find them for you now. Oh, there they are. I'll just play one or two of these for you first before we go any further. Hang on.
That's a very much common sense idea, isn't it, really? Because if you're told to go into military, if people don't want to go into the military and they're not working, they'll soon get a job. They'll soon get a job. I think it's a common sense approach, and I think it's a good approach. Cheers, Niall.
How are you doing, lads? National service would be a great idea if neutrality is enshrined in our constitution. It just seems to be a push and a push and a push lately for getting into alliances or EU armies and crazy stuff, no? And I believe the majority of Irish people want to remain neutral. Yes, we don't have neutrality in our constitution, but we have a tradition of neutrality. And I believe that to safeguard that, a national service should wait until somebody gets to enshrine neutrality into our constitution, because I think there's a lot of warmongering, pushing towards alliances that does not make sense for Ireland.
I couldn't agree with him more, to be honest with you, by the way. I do believe that neutrality should be enshrined in the constitution, as I believe the triple lock should be as well. And if they want to change the triple lock, I believe it should go to a referendum. And by the way, that's why another reason why I want to go to Europe and I want to represent the Irish people, because I'll make it my job to be a watchdog on the creeping EU centralisation, especially over military matters. The Commission has been very open in getting rid of the kind of national veto on EU defence policy. And Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil's own political groups, by the way, the EPP and Renew, have been openly pushing for that as well. So that is part of my job if I get a job and you vote for me next week. And I would ask you to vote for me. Please do. Remember, I am an independent with Independent Ireland. Of course, there's a group of independent people who have come together. I'm not part of the establishment. I never will be. And somebody said to me there a while ago, but if you go into politics, it'll corrupt you just like everybody else. Look, I've had a reasonable amount of power with a platform on the radio for 30 years. Has it corrupted me so far? I've probably had more power than a lot of politicians have had in relation to the platform that I've had, particularly on radio. Has it corrupted me? I don't believe so. It doesn't corrupt my opinion. You know what I'm like with my opinion. You know, I don't suffer fools. I don't care what I say. I don't care who it upsets. I just say what I'm thinking. And I'll be saying what you're thinking. So please do vote for me and let me be your voice in Europe when it comes to immigration, when it comes to housing. And somebody said to me yesterday, well, what can you do about housing? We can do a lot about housing in Europe, by the way, in relation to our budgets, in relation to setting up an EU commission with funding for housing, in relation to, there's already directives there that stifle planning and put obstacles in the way of development and planning. So there's a lot can be done in Europe in relation to housing. In relation to everything, remember that over 80% of our laws come from directives and laws that come from Europe. So it's important that our EU MEPs are the ones that are on side. And when you have MEPs who I've argued with on RTE all week, who, for example, don't believe immigration is a problem, what possibility have they got of solving something if they don't believe it's a problem in the first place? They have no chance of solving the problem. When we have, for example, Catherine Martin yesterday saying the Green Party, that her Green MEP will be going to Europe to push to introduce hate speech laws all across Europe and Ireland. These are laws, by the way, that the Irish people have said we don't need, we don't want. So much so, actually, Commissioner Mann were releasing notes yesterday in relation to the way we treat politicians online. And they said that if you say anything bad about politicians or abusive or your harassment or whatever, it comes under the Irish hate speech laws from 1989. In other words, they're admitting that the laws that we have already are adequate to be used by Commissioner Mann. So why do we need new laws? We need new laws because the government believe you need new laws because they want to shut you up. And that's exactly what it says on that screen scrolling behind me. They told me to shut up. But I can tell you, nobody will tell me to shut up. You know what I've done on radio over the last 30 years. You know the way I've been outspoken. You know I don't care what I say. And the BAI, the Broadcasting Authority, are well used to me. Audience expectation. The audience know what I'm like. I don't care what I say. As long as I believe it's the truth, and as long as I really believe it's what the people want, I don't care what I say. I'm not going to turn around and say, for example, that a woman has a penis just to satisfy an NGO. I'm not going to turn around and say there's no such thing as illegal immigration, which is what I was told on the RTE the other day. Oh, you can't say that. You can't be using those words, illegal immigration. That doesn't exist. It's not illegal to come to Ireland and claim asylum. Yes, it is. It's illegal to come to Ireland if you have no documentation. If you have no documentation and you enter this state, you can claim asylum if you want. But the point you enter this country, you're entering it illegally. Because it is in the Irish statute books. It's a law. And if it's not a law, why were 100 people prosecuted for it? So the idea that, you know, Barry Andrews and Fianna Fáil and Sinead Gibney and everybody else that was around that table would turn around and say there's no such thing as the word illegal immigrant is an absolute nonsense. And you want them to solve our problems when they can't even use the right language. They're afraid to use it in case they upset somebody. I'm not afraid to use it. Illegal immigrant. There are illegal immigrants coming into this country. So as I said already, please do vote for me. And I promise I will be the real voice of Dublin, Ireland. I won't be the mamby-pamby voice. I won't be the politically correct voice. And I will go over there and make noise. And if there's something that I can't do something about from a European perspective, I will certainly make enough noise that I will embarrass the Irish government to doing it, like healthcare, for example, which is one thing that I wouldn't have a huge amount of influence over. But certainly, given a huge European platform, I can embarrass the Irish government into doing something. So please give me that opportunity next Friday, not this Friday, but the following Friday. Make sure you go out and vote. Don't vote for the government parties. Don't vote for Sinn Féin. Of course, they've made a million promises over the years and turned their back on every single one of them. They flip-flop from side to side, don't they? Oh yeah, we don't want hate speech laws, even though we all voted for it last year. So please, Give me an opportunity, and I promise I will be the real voice of Dublin and Ireland. And vote for me next June the 7th. By the way, thank you to everybody who's been a little bit patient. I know we've had a couple of repeats on over the last couple of weeks. You know, I did warn you about that 6 weeks ago when I said I was going to run for election, that we would try not to have it affect the podcast too much. But we did know it would have an effect on it, particularly over the last couple of weeks coming up towards the election, because I can't campaign. Like, I'm going to go out, I have to do an interview straight after this for the media, and then I'm going out again and we're giving out more flyers and what have you this afternoon, or later on this afternoon. So it's just hectic, absolutely hectic. But I am trying to squeeze the podcast in every single day. We want to give you that voice, that platform. But remember, of course, I don't have a full-time job anymore. I had to give it up nearly 5 weeks ago now. So I'm on beans and chips. We rely solely on your subscriptions. I said to you before that we have to put money into it to keep this podcast going for the costs involved. I don't have that money now because I'm not getting paid this month. So hopefully, if I get elected, I will get paid eventually. But that won't be for another month or two. So please do. I'm on the breadline. So please do try and subscribe. Or if you can donate, the one thing you could really do is donate or subscribe on our website, nileboylan.com. Do it now if you can, nileboylan.com. You're not donating towards the election, by the way. That's already sorted. We're up to as much as we can possibly do on that. But nileboylan.com. You can still donate towards the election if you want to, by the way. You go to nileboylanforeurope.ie. But this is separate. This is for the podcast to pay for us to continue to do this. And as soon as I get elected, I'm being very confident now, we will continue to do the podcast. We will continue to do it. And we may have to move the schedule to different days because obviously I'll have to do my job in Brussels because that's what you're paying as a taxpayer for me to do. So we will continue to do the podcast. And my promise to you is, unlike the MEPs we've had in the past over the last 5 years who disappear, I won't be doing that. I won't be disappearing. I'll be coming back and telling you in the podcast exactly what I did every single week, what I'm voting for, getting your input, because that's important to me, because that's what I've always done. And I said this yesterday to the Irish Times when they were saying, what's different about you and a politician? I said, I'm listening to the people. The politicians are only listening to each other. So please give me that opportunity to vote and please support the podcast. Otherwise, we cannot keep it going. It's expensive, really expensive to do every single day. So please support it by going to nileboylan.com. You can either donate or you can subscribe. And if you subscribe, you can watch all the previous episodes. There's only 200 of them now at this stage. So please do that, nileboylan.com. If you can donate 20 quid, 50 quid, 5 quid, it doesn't matter. 5 million, whatever you can donate, it will really, really help us. It's coming up to the end of the month. The bills have to be paid. We're not going to have the money to do it, but we're going to try our best. But with your help, we can continue to pay for the podcast just to get us through this difficult period where I don't have a job. So please, nileboylan.com. That's where you can donate. Thank you very much indeed. We should talk to you again tomorrow. Until then, have a great day.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan Podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.